Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Well, thank you so much for staying with us. You're still on Point of View. My name is Phemelo Modene. Now, today was the day, this day that families of the Craddock 4 have been waiting for, and I think I would say almost 40 years now, 39 years later, they've been asking for questions, and you know that they took government to court, forcing government to finally do something about this case. And today was the day. You and I have been following the story for a while. We've spoken to the family, the Galata family, and we've been tracing where they are with this. But I just thought it was important that as the inquest began today, that we got a sense of how they were doing and what it must have felt like finally sitting down in court and for the proceedings to begin. Lukhanyo Galata is on the line with us, who is for Galata's son. We've spoken to him before. Thank you so much for your time. And what did today mean to you and the family?
Romala, thank you so very much. You know, every time when I say it to you, like, it's really like my pleasure. It really is. But anyway, today was a good day. Mm. Today was really a good day. Mm. You know, obviously on our way to court, we were very nervous. Mm. You know, we were sitting in the bus. There was in the shuttle, and then at some point it became very quiet.
Sure.
You know, and obviously, and I think everybody kind of, I think the gravity of the moment, you know, you could feel it in the bus. Lots of tension. We eventually get to court. We had to wait a little bit for proceedings to get underway. But eventually, you know, proceedings got underway, and we could start relaxing, you know. Our lawyer spoke, Howard Varney. He was followed by Thembeka Ngubatobi, who's representing the community of Linganihle and Umbulelo Goniwe. And obviously, the lawyers for the interested or for the persons of interest also spoke. Eventually, when the court adjourned, it would have been just after 12, with the judge having said, okay, well, tomorrow we'll do the inspection in loco, in Craddock, you know, just following the processes. On the way back in the shuttle to the guest house, you know, there was a lot of laughter, you know, and like a, just like a palpable sense of relief that ultimately, you know, a democratic court, a court in democratic South Africa has finally heard the Craddock matter, which meant that we are now one day closer to truth, to justice, hopefully some healing and some closure as well.
To what extent are you hoping for a, as you said, closure, when so many who are supposed to be there to answer to what happened are no longer there? And and yes, the process is unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
How optimistic about what this process will bring to the family?
Mm-hmm. So the denial, basically, of justice in the true sense of it,
mm-hmm.
in terms of prosecutions and mm-hmm. people being held accountable mm-hmm. and all of that,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think that process, that denial, has forced us to reconsider what justice is and what justice looks like. And, you know, and I think now with the inquest having started, we realize that for us as the families, justice, you know, justice looks different now.
Mm.
You know, justice is something other than an actual prosecution. For now, justice is truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. Justice is a correction of the historic record around what happened to my father and his comrades. Justice is knowing that the families of the people that took our father's lives, they will go into the record books for, you know, for they can't deny it now.
Mm.
they can't deny it now because the court in democratic South Africa would have expressed itself on this matter. This is what justice will look like for us now. The other matters, in terms of, you know, the denial and all of those are matters that will now be dealt with by the Commission of Inquiry the President gazetted a few days ago. Mm-hmm. So, again, in that instance, justice will take the form of truth, because there we will know who denied. So in this inquest, we'll know who killed them. Who killed my father and his comrades?
Yeah.
And then hopefully the Commission of Inquiry will then tell us who denied them justice.
You know, there are many layers to the story. And every time we talk about it, I think we peel at just a little bit. But symbolically, I mean, when one, and obviously this will keep playing itself out symbolically, and maybe those listening don't know these details of the stabbing to the heart, directly to the heart, what it symbolizes, those wounds, I think, are so symbolic and were so intentional. And also the framing of what the apartheid regime seeked to do in giving a narrative of askaris and the fact that, you know, they're sowing division within the movement. The damage, therefore, you know, being multiplied over and over again, and what that meant at the time.
You know, what it meant at the time was really a message, Pimelo. You know, I had a conversation a few years ago with Dr. Alan Busart, obviously at the time who was quite an instrumental leader within the United Democratic Front. And he described the murders of the Craddock Four to me like this. He said, what the Boers did at that point was not only, obviously, did they desecrate our fathers' bodies in the manner in which they did physically, but then they sent a message. Mm. They sent a message to each and every political activist, to each and every one in this country who may have wanted to stand up against the unjust system of apartheid. Mm. And the message that they sent was not only would we kill you in this most brutal of ways, right? Where, for instance, we will stab you multiple times. We will cut off your fingers. We will cut off your hand. We will pull the tongue out of your mouth. We will burn your body, right? Not only would we do that, but what we will do as the apartheid government is that we will get away with desecrating your body, committing that crime against your humanity. We will get away with it, right? And this is genuinely what they had sought to do. And they did that for a very long time. And when you were asking this question, just my conversation with Dr. Alan Busart just came to my mind, and I was like, because truly, when you analyze it, when you sit and when you think about it, this is what they did.
Yeah.
The message that they sent was, you know, was far more heinous, I think, than anything they could do, other than, of course, taking someone's life.
It did something else that I think you and I spoke about, you know, at the very, very beginning when we started talking, is, yes, these were activists, but they were also people who brought massive hope to the communities, who led their communities, who brought light and excellence. And you had communities that were really functioning despite everything that was happening around them. And so that, too, was a message to say, we will not allow for excellence to thrive and for you guys to thrive as a people. We will destroy that, too.
Yeah. You know, and that's what they did. You know, Matthew Gonyiwe was a math and science teacher par excellence, you know. My father taught accounting you know, business and those kinds. And again, you know, having spoken to some of their pupils, they spoke of them as being so much more than just teachers. You know, my mom recalls the story as to how every month my dad would come, you know, hand over his teacher's as a salary check to her. But then the only thing he would ask is if you could, you know, be able to buy some bread, some polony, and some milk and some cool drink for his class, so that when those kids that came from these homes, that, you know, impoverished homes, that they would eat, he would give them something to eat, and then once they were all done eating and stuff, then, you know, the class would start, then he would teach, you know. So by killing my dad, it wasn't just, you know, killing this human being that was this activist, but he was also killing someone that was providing so much more to the community than, you know, than just being a teacher. Mm-hmm. He was also someone who provided a nurturing meal to children who otherwise didn't have that. So when they took him, they took, you know, more than just a teacher or a community leader, but they also took someone who actually fed the children.
When I speak of the intention of the regime to sow divisions, I was speaking of the fact that, of course, the police created a cover story saying that they were killed mm-hmm. by elements of Azapo in a factional dispute. It's difficult to imagine now, but anybody at the time would tell you that is something that has lived with all these liberation movements for a long time. People's lives were destroyed when there was any doubt at all that you were betting for the other side.
Yeah, you know, obviously the necklacing story, is something that was quite prominent, in black townships, whenever there was a suspicion that somebody was talking to the police in a manner, that happened. And I think what we will see and hear over the course of this inquest is how that was planned and how it was deliberate, you know. It was premeditated that they were going to kill my father and his comrade, and that they were going to blame it on Azapo and black-on-black violence and to try to, obviously, as part of this massive cover-up. You know, Pamela, I spent about 3.5 hours with the lawyers, just going through my statement that I'm expected, obviously, to give it to court later this week. And as we were going through that, there was a part that basically, where these guys in their planning, they had actually said that whatever security action is taken against Matthew Gomiwa and my father and whatever, it must be done in such a way so that they not only defend themselves in court, but that they are able to do so successfully. You know what I mean? Imagine you planning something to that level where you say, guys, we mustn't just be able to defend ourselves in court. We must be able to do so successfully. And all of these things, the fob it off, try to blame black on black violence, say it was a Zapo, all of those things were all part of a plan. Now, can you imagine all of these divisions that had to come together? Stratcom had to obviously be part of that, you know, because then they're helping with this framing of the
murders, the propaganda.
Of the Paddock 4. Yes, they're helping with the propaganda. Thank you, ma'am. So there was a lot of people that were involved, up to 49 people. Sure. Up to 49 people were involved in the murders of the Paddock 4.
I want to ask you, you know, you spoke of the bus ride this morning and obviously the ride back. But on a more personal note, I want to ask how your mother was this morning.
Yeah, my mother is my mother's an amazing person. She's an amazing woman being, a human being. She's an amazing woman, you know, she, we couldn't have asked to have been born to, you know, to a better mother. So in the morning, she, obviously when she gets nervous, she gets very strict, right? Mm-hmm. So she had to make sure that we were all on the shuttle on time.
On time.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So we had to go. And obviously when we were in court, marshalling us, Lukanya, where is this? And, you know, like...
You didn't forget this?
Yeah. You know, and then obviously court started and everything went. When we came back, there was a moment that we had with a debrief moment that we had with the lawyers afterwards. And then obviously my mom got really emotional and started crying, you know, and then that got all of us going. But, you know, and then she had some time to kind of calm down and all of that. And then again, as we were driving back, she and Mrs. Nkhlawule, you know, it was a completely different experience for them. Remember, they've done two inquests before, but where it was just the four mothers. It was just always the four of them. Mm-hmm. So today, it wasn't, you know, obviously Mrs. Gwenyu had passed away. Mrs. Mkonto couldn't come. She can't travel. So it was, you know, two of the mothers and then the rest of us as the children. So it was a very different experience for them, you know, and they were actually, you know, the most vocal, cracking jokes afterwards. Mm-hmm. They, you know, it was and I was glad that they could have that moment mm-hmm. where they were not just sharing it with us, their children, but that, you know, coming from court the first day of the inquest was something that where they could that you know that they there was some level of joy within them, so that it was very nice to be a part of that experience and to watch them living it. You know, we're very proud that you know they've had that.
Well, send our love to your families. We watch with interest. We are interested, and we're right behind them. Thank you very much for talking to us today.
Thank you, ma'am. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Lukanya Galata is one of the Craddock Four's sons, and he speaks to us today. After the beginning of the inquest today, they were at the Qabega High Court today, and that inquest beginning today, 39 years later. And what a moment it is. We thought we'd just catch up with them. And obviously, we'll keep an eye on it and we'll bring you as much of it as possible as the days go by.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.